author John U. Bacon has written a lot of books, including the one he's most famous for, The Great Halifax Explosion, which I still have not read that I want to read. But he's written a lot of sports books. And like my wife saw this somewhere and she got it for me for Christmas. And I said, well, that looks interesting. And it is. It's called Let Them Lead, Unexpected Lessons in Leadership from America's Worst High School Hockey Team. Now, whether they are indeed were the worst high school hockey team in the nation, we don't know. But high school hockey teams are rated nationally. And there are ways they do it, and I'm not really sure that that's really a good thing. But it's a the Huron River Rats are part of the Michigan Metro Hockey League. Michigan is a state that has funny rules for high school sports. And I like this. You play in an elite travel team, you can't play on your high school team.
Oh, I like that a lot.
I like that a lot. And so the downside is that, of course, if a hockey team is not very good, your high school hockey team, then kids try and get on the elite team. But this resonated with me because, and this is, people that know me know this is no secret. When I took over as a head coach, football coach at John Baps, it was in the middle of July. I had to scramble to put a staff together. And there's no, I don't want any bad feelings here. My friend and mentor, Matt Clark, had taken the job at Orono, which was Class B at the time. And it made sense for him to take that job. And he was always supportive of me and remains a very dear friend. And but we only had 25 players. And people say, well, you only need 11 at a time.
Yeah.
Well, I would point out that about 9 of the players had never played in a varsity. Yeah, he never played in a tackle football game. Baps is not a school that has a feeder program, and so unless kids came from towns that had them, a lot of our kids had never played before. I'm only mentioning this because what happened is some players made a very bad mistake and held a very bad party, and at that time it was a death penalty at Baps if you broke certain rules. And we were suddenly down to having only 17 players. Yes, 17 players, and only 9 of those that were left had played in a regular game. And a decision was made by the athletic director and the head of school, a decision I will never criticize, that it would be unsafe for us to go up to play undefeated for God knows since, you know, World War I, I think, Stearns. and we didn't have enough players to be safe. A lot of people took it out on us over the years, angry. Thankfully, Dale Curry, who was a great guy, was the AD at Lincoln at the time, Matt Nauckhook, sort of stood up for us and changed the tenor of the way things were going. So I know what it's like to lose. We were 1-3 when we had to stop playing. We had lost to the eventual Class B champions and the eventual Class C champions and runners-up. And we had beaten Dexter at home. Looked like we could turn the season around and be okay. This party happened. The program got shut down. Now, that's not as dire as it was for Bacon when he took over at his alma mater, and which a job which a lot of people didn't think he was possibly fit for. They were looking to get some veteran coach. But he had a vision, and his vision was to know what's wrong before you decide what's wrong. And I think that's a really, a lot of this book is about how you could apply this to corporations and businesses, and I don't care about any of that. But there's a lot of very sage advice for coaches in this book. And the best thing about it is it's not a fairy tale ending. He coaches them for a number of years. They get way better. They become respected. They finally beat their rivals. You know, they get into state tournaments. They get invited, but they don't win the states. They get close, but they don't get there. And so, in a sense, to me, it's a better book because almost no one gets there, right? Now, and the only reason I talked about the thing with Baps before, and I'm going to talk a little bit about Baps again to bring this together, is I also know the other side of that. I know what it's like to win 5 state championships in a row in women's track, and I know what it's like to wait 8 out of 10 years. When you don't win in those situations, yeah, you're disappointed, but you can say, well, you know, I mean, Nick Saban's not happy today, but, you know, 7 of the last 13 ain't bad. When you've never won, and this high school was never good, it never had a time when it was a big program, and you can build one from scratch by getting everyone to buy in, then you've done something really remarkable. But, you know, this really reminded me of Entitled to Nothing by our friend Bob Walsh. Mm. Because what Bob Walsh said is, if you don't listen as a coach, and he says, and I'm not talking about just hearing them, watching them, the words move, but I remember talking about this with him in person. If you don't really listen, you don't know what it is they need to know.
Right, right.
And I was thinking about the first time I ever saw Bob coaching on television. Maine was playing Northern Illinois, and they were ahead, but you could see Northern Illinois whittling away. And we got more and more guys in foul trouble. And somebody would foul out, and they'd hang their head. Bob's clapping their hands and pushing their chin up and going, you know, tugging on the jersey. It's okay, it's okay. We lost, Maine lost by a few points. And I went over to the, I didn't know him at the time. I went over to his office, and I said, Coach Walsh, told him who I was, and I said, I was in one of the most inspiring basketball games I've ever seen. And he looked at me and I said, you were coaching from the beginning to the end and you never got down. And those kids will never forget that. The kids that were coached by John Bacon all feel the same way. And a lot of them went on to do very well. There were no NHL stars. There were no guys that are names, you know, the guys that went on and played Division I hockey. But what he did was he came up with these ideas that we will win because we will work harder than anybody else. Everybody can say that.
Right.
Their off-season workouts, man, they were tough. And they did them. And the kids showed up and almost nobody missed. They were voluntary. Can't make them, you know, can't make kids come. If a kid couldn't come and he didn't call and was late, the coach would just say to him, why weren't you here? And the kid was supposed to just answer this way, no excuse, sir. If he called up and said, look, my mom is in the hospital, my father's at work, the car is broken, whatever, that's fine. You know, you could. But if you miss regular season practices, there was an extra little bit of hell to pay, but it was none of that stupid, knee-jerk, old-school garbage.
Right.
It was always involving talking to the kid, saying, what were the expectations and how did you not meet them, right? And when you hear the testimonies of these guys who have gone on, many of them, to be very successful in life, they talk about what he learned, what they taught him. Now, he did a couple of things that I thought were pretty innovative. And one was he wanted to credit everybody with every win, right? To try not to draw attention to the individual player who was the star. And, you know, when I thought about that yesterday as I was watching the Maine women's hockey game, and afterwards they named the three stars of the game. Yeah, they looked at numbers. They looked at numbers,
right,
and they picked the three stars of the game that way. I'll tell you right now that Nicole Pateman for University of Maine played as good a hockey game as a female defensive player I've seen since Allison Mateau left. And Allison Mateau could flat out play, and she came from hockey pedigree. And really led in a lot of ways. And, you know, when they gave out the stars, I turned to Janet and I said, okay, I get it, the numbers. Guapola scored two goals. Morgan Trimper tipped home one of the early goals. You know, they were all good. The point is, there was no star in that game. There were 20 and 19, whatever the hell it was, 32, 40. There were 41 kids on both sides that could have been stars. That's what this guy got.
Well, yeah, and as you know from coaching, quite often the things that enable a team to be successful are not always measured in statistics.
Yeah. I remember back when I used to have a quarrel with this radio station this morning, guys, friendly quarrel, when they would have the player of the week.
Well, and those things, I'll take the stand on that. Well, I've said it for years. Player of the week awards for high school athletes are the biggest crock. And the only reason radio stations do them is to drive up, well, these days, to drive up social media hits.
Right.
It has nothing to do with who's the best athlete. It's a popularity contest, and I get it. But quite often, it's also a situation where people from schools vote time after time, just keep hitting the button,
yeah,
and vote 500 times. And then, you know, their kid gets it, and then the radio station can go, we had 12,000 people vote. Well, no, you had like 25 people vote 1,000, you know, 500
exactly
times.
And the other thing that would happen is in football here in Eastern Maine, we would play crossover games between B,
right,
and C, and a big B school would womp on some little C school 60,
right,
to nothing.
And a kid passes for 400,
right,
500 yards. Oh, he's a player of the week. No, he's not.
Now, I remember when my son Ben got player of the week, Haggie Pratt said to me, and we're not related, but Haggie coached for years at Dexter's, an assistant coach at Baps now, said, now here's why he got it. He had an interception, a touchdown run, a game-saving tackle, and a kickoff return for a touchdown. He said, and 148 yards or whatever, 158 yards. He says, I get that. He said, the kid who got it last week had 225 yards against a team that gave up 460 right. yards on the ground.
Well, and I also think, too, with high school athletes in particular, that runs counter to what you're trying to accomplish, exactly. which is the sense that everybody contributes to this effort.
And that's what, and this guy, John Bacon, stressed that, and I've seen people talk that talk, but he walked it with these kids, and there were times when it wasn't easy, and somebody was really good, and they wanted to be the star, and he'd say, well, you know, you got this is what you have to do to be part of this team. If you want to be part of this team, you can go out and try out for a travel team. Do whatever you want to do. These are our rules. This is what we're going to do. They wore their school colors. They had a school color shirt and a school color tie. They wore them to all their games. He had kids that didn't have a lot of money. One of the parents said, well, I think that'll look great. And she just ran out and went to the local mall and bought all the yellow shirts and green ties she could find, right? And it became part of their persona. And I think that's what nowadays we've so lost with the idea, my kid's going to get a scholarship. My kid's going to do this, that. Right. And one of the reasons I got tired of coaching was that my kid, why isn't my kid on the relay team? Well, because she's not the fastest. Yeah, but she really wants to go to college and get a scholarship in track. Really? And that would be where someplace like Arkansas, where she's going to run 4 seconds faster in the 200 than she does now. I mean, you know, and I think he just brought into perspective what can be great about high school sports. So I'm hoping to be able to get a hold of him. I don't know exactly how I'm going to do that. I'll figure it out through the publisher. But this is a really, really good, really good book, and people could learn a lot about being a coach and being a good human being from reading it.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading it because I've believed for a long time, as a coach, as a former athletic director, that high school sports are not travel sports. They are not the gateway to a college scholarship. But by the way, particularly here in Maine, there are not a lot of kids getting college scholarships. But even if they are, high school sports should be no different than any other high school extracurricular or co-curricular activity. And if it's not working for the last kid on the bench,
it's not working at all.
It's not working at all. And you've got to make it a good experience for everybody. And you don't do that by celebrating only the elite athletes. And nothing, well, I'm sure there are other things that anger me more about high school athletics, but this recent trend of schools holding these impromptu press conferences to announce that some student has a scholarship or quite often just a chance to play college athletics.
Yeah.
Wow, what a horrible message to send. Look, I get it. You're celebrating success, but are we doing that? Are we doing that for the future teachers, the future scientists, the future lawyers, doctors, business owners, truck drivers, carpenters? Because I'll tell you what, most of them will go on to do that thing after high school.
Right.
Very few of these people who go to college, even to get a scholarship to play sports, are going to become professional athletes and or coaches.
Nobody held a press conference when Paige Brown got accepted to Stanford and had, that's her name, right? Paige? I don't know.
I'm not sure who.
The girl from Bangor High School was a student of the week here.
Oh, gosh.
Stanford.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. But brilliant kid. He's going to one of the top universities in the United States. Already had scientific discovery credits to her name in high school. There was no press conference for that. There was, you know, you gave it more press than the school did. I'm not picking on Bangor High School for this.
But because every school does that, but it's the wrong message, I think.
I absolutely agree. I mean, when I was in prep school, I went to a very small, 225 all boys school. We had some kids go on to be really good athletes and play Division I, become professional hockey players, professional football players. But it was never celebrated except at an athletic awards event. It was never celebrating graduation. It didn't say so-and-so is going to go on and play at Boston College. Bob Watts is going to do this. This guy's going to play. It was always, we'll celebrate athletics during athletics. We'll celebrate academics during academics. But when the whole person is celebrated, that'll be a different kind of award.
Well, and also the reality is, here in Maine, and I think a lot of places, those who get those, especially D1 scholarships, It's unlikely to be for what they did on their high school team. It's because they went to a camp, they played on a travel team, they had some sort of national caliber showcase where people got to see what they could do against elite competition, you know, not playing another Class C school from Maine.
Right, and or they went to Bridgeton Academy for an extra year, or Avon Old Farms in Connecticut, or you look at some of these other ways that they get that, you know, look at the kids that went to Exeter over the years from Maine that were good athletes in high school. And I don't blame them. I went to prep school. I that's not something I'm against people doing. But let's put it in perspective. The chances of getting a D1 football scholarship for someone playing in this area, other than perhaps the University of Maine taking a chance on them, ain't very big.
No, and if that's what we're doing sports for, then it's not very cost efficient.
No.
Because we're producing so few scholarship athletes, and if that's all it's about is supporting the elite athletes, then don't bother.
Right.
Let them go. Let privatized athletics take those kids, and let's do quality programs. I mean, this will never happen. I'm not even serious about it myself, but what would you do with quality intramural programs if you put the money into that?
Well, you know, that's what Dick Soucie used to say to me. I wish we had the facilities to have quality intramurals. He said, because, you know, if we did, we'd end up having better athletics. He said, for two reasons. He said, the kids who aren't getting anything out of it will come to play that game just for free, for fun, to play around. He said, and they might develop skills. They might get better at things that would allow them to then transfer back into a varsity or sub-varsity program. And, you know, look around Europe, the kids are playing in the parks all the time.
And you wouldn't see kids give up a sport at 12.
No.
Like they do now.
I know. And it's not just the video games where they can be heroes.
No.
It's because no one gives them a chance to try out for what they want to try out.
Well, and it's because of coaching quite often. Bad coaching, poor coaching, wrong coaching. And again, coaching at some, and not all youth coaches, most of them are good, most of them doing it for the right reasons, but we all know that youth coach, and there are more than one, that, you know, can tell you how many intergalactic championships they've won because they happen to have the kid who was 5'10" when everybody else they were playing was 4'9".
No kidding. You know, we used to run beefcake relays, 4x4s with guys on all the throwing teams, and we did it at all the track meets until track meets started going too long with the added events. And I'll wrap this up quickly, but our guys look forward to that. Now, this is the biggest guys in the team, the shot putters, running 440 meters as fast as they can. We would have to have whole sets of them. I remember one time that the four schools each had one person that wanted to run, and we just looked the other way and put them all in. Said, one was from Central, one was from over. You guys can run in the beefcake relay. People told me afterwards, kids that ran those said to me years later, you know, coach, the most fun we ever had were the beefcake relays. He says, not winning states, that was great, but the beefcake relays, those were the best.
That's Sports Lit 101. What's coming up next week?
Next week, we're going to talk about one of the other essays in this book that we talked about a couple weeks ago, Overcoming the Neutral Zone Trap. The Tragedy of the Enforcer, and Lynn Cody's The Antagonist, and Jeff Lemire's Roughneck, with my good friend Fred Mason from the University of New Brunswick. And I just had confirmed Carl Subban's book is on the way.
Excellent.
And Angie and Carl will be talking to us.
All right. We'll take a break. It's downtown.
Hi, this is Ed Beck.